Chapter 41. I once spent time working in a settlement in Israel, which reminded me somewhat of Pietroch 112. I was going through a pastoral phase, having spent a good 120 years indulging in wine, women, and song. Ironically enough, it was Akinlaye, the queen of a good time, who inspired me to move to the promised land, where I would, so my reasoning went, rediscover man's purer nature through hard work and agrarian toil. She, who had derided my ambition to kill Richard Lyle, was living at the time in Hong Kong. The year was 1971. I was 52 years old, and wondering whether heroin addiction was such a bad way to go. "Don't you see how lucky you are?" she asked, lying on a recliner beneath the stars, as the needles were prepared by her silent-footed maid. "You can do things to your body that no one else would dare. You can die of happiness and come back to die again." "Are they clean?" I asked, observing the needles carefully on their small silver tray.
"Jesus, Harry, what does it matter? Yes, they're clean. I get them straight off this guy Hong, a triad boy."
"How do you meet a triad boy?" She shrugged. "They run all the good time houses in this place. You've got money and a sense of fun in this town. You meet people, you know. Here." She slipped off the recliner and, giggling a little at her own good nature, rolled up my sleeve for me. As I get older, the veins on my arm become bluer, or perhaps the skin whiter, and she chuckled to see the blood bulge in the crook of my arm as she pulled the tourniquet tight. The concern in my face must have showed as she picked up the first needle of amber fluid, because she grinned and slapped my skin playfully.
"Harry, you're not going to tell me that you've never done this before."
"By the time I had the cash and the time," I replied firmly, "I'd also had several lifetimes of exposure to the notion that it was a bad thing."
"You mustn't let yourself be influenced by what the Linears say," she chided. "We're not like them."
She was good with a needle. I hardly felt it go in. Euphoria is, I believe, the term they use to describe the sensation, and upon experience I found it to be an entirely useless definition, as it relies on comparatives that are not apt to the situation. A happiness beyond compare, a contentment beyond understanding, a bliss, a travelling, a freeing of the mind from the flesh, these are all, in their ways, an appropriate description of the process, but they mean nothing, for no recollection can recreate them, and no substitute mimic them. So, having known what euphoria is, it remains precisely that, a word with longing attached, but no meaning when actually experiencing the thing. My arms and legs were heavy, my mouth was dry, and I did not care, for my mouth was not mine. I knew that I was still and time was moving, and wondered how it had taken me so long to comprehend that this was the nature of time itself, and wished I had a notebook to hand so I could jot down these thoughts, these profound, beautiful thoughts I'd never thought before, which would, I felt certain, revolutionize the way mankind worked. I watched Akinlaye inject herself and inject the maid, who lay with her head in Akinlaye's lap, a dutiful kitten, as the drug did its work. And I wanted to explain to them that I'd had the most extraordinary idea about the nature of reality, seen the most incredible truth, if only I could make others understand it. Opiates suppress sexual desire, but I knew that Akinlaye kissed me. We were not young lovers anymore, but then it didn't matter, for our love was a thing which, like euphoria, could not be explained to those who did not experience it. I knew that the maid was dancing, and so Akinlaye and I danced too. And then the maid danced down the length of the deck, whirling and spinning, until she reached the prow of the ship. We followed, my legs too heavy to move by themselves, so I dragged myself along the floor with my arms, face down on my belly, craning my neck to see Akinlaye put her lips to the maid's neck and whisper the secrets of the universe into her ears. Then the maid laughed some more, stood up on the railing that ran round the edge of the ship, spread her arms wide, and let her own weight take her down, face first, into the water. Her corpse washed up 2 days later on the beach. The coroner's ruling was suicide. She was buried in an unmarked grave, no family to mourn her. Akinlaye had left the port without telling me her servant's name. 3 hours after the coffin was covered, I went to Israel, signing on as a worker in a settlement beneath the turbulent ranges of the Golan Heights. I was not Jewish and had no political affection for the state, but a farmer had offered me the chance to pick oranges for him over the summer, and I had nowhere better to go. For 7 months I woke at dawn and worked with a basket on my back, ate flat bread at supper and read no words, watched no TV, heard no radio, and spoke to no one beyond the settlement walls. I was housed with 13 other workers in a wooden shack of low bunk beds, and when I failed to do a satisfactory job, accepted the chiding of the farmer like a little boy. The family whispered that I was mentally damaged in some way, unable to understand why this white-haired Englishman would have travelled to the sun-drenched hills of a foreign land to crawl in dust and dirt for his days. Sometimes the boys from the local villages would come and stare, and none of us went outside the settlement alone for fear of being attacked by the families whose land the settlement had taken. In time, none of us left the settlement at all, but hid behind the high white stone walls from a hostile society only a bullet away from retribution. I worked until the day the farmer's wife sat down beside me and said, "I think you need to let it go." She was a large woman, a black wig on her head, a black apron around her belly. "This thing you carry inside you," she said at last. "I don't know what it is. I don't know where you got it. But Harry," and her hand slipped round the inside of my thigh as she spoke, "the past is the past. You are alive today. That is all that matters. You must remember, because it is who you are. But as it is who you are, you must never, ever regret. To regret your past is to regret your soul." Her hand wandered up my leg. I caught it by the wrist before it could finish its journey and laid it carefully down in her lap. She sighed, turning her head slightly away, her shoulders to the side. "It was only a second," she explained. "For a second my hand touched yours, but that second is gone and cannot be seen, heard, or felt ever again. This second is gone too, the moment in which I spoke by your side. It is dead. Let it die." So saying, she stood up briskly, patted down her apron, the skirt around her buttocks and back, and went back to work. I left in the night, leaving not a sign behind.